Here is obviously an egregious case where they found only 17% of their spending in 2017, and just 9% of the $4 million in donations they received were used for its charitable purposes. And so the clear indications of fraud and deceptive practices, and hopefully this is what the state AGs are focusing on when they're seeking regulation. So an interesting trend as well is that the 50 states plus the Federal Trade Commission have been collaborating significantly in terms of enforcement of against charities that are either misleading consumers or false advertising or conducting fraudulent activities. And part of what's interesting about this is that it is all 50 states and the Federal Trade Commission. So the collaboration between the state and federal agencies is continuing, it's ongoing, it's a great thing to see. What's interesting to note is what organization is not involved, which is the IRS. And that's not because of the shutdown. I think it's interesting that the IRS isn't taking an initiative with respect to some of these activities. Now, whether after the FTC and the 50 states, whether the IRS is going to go and audit after the fact, it's unclear. But the coordinated actions of the state and the FTC is good, I think, for the industry as a whole. To the extent that there is, you know, especially through the Form 1023-EZ, there's an easy opportunity for organizations to be formed and obtain tax-exempt status. And so it's going to be more and more important for these coordinated activities with each of the states have very limited resources, so these coordinated activities are helpful and productive for the industry as a whole to go after these abusers of the system. In July of 2018, the New York AG settled with a charity that used deceptive marketing and commercial co-ventures. They were misleading consumers in the way and how the funds were being utilized. This is of note because commercial co-ventures, although heavily regulated by state law, the enforcement is relatively light. And I think it's helpful to see that bad actors are being enforced against, and it's also helping to encourage compliance by, I know my clients as well as organizations out there that are trying to encourage the for-profits to comply with the various obligations. In addition, in the news, the New York AG is pursuing remedies against the Trump Foundation for violations of state and federal law. I think to the extent that there is publicity about misuse or abuse by private foundations, the state AGs are also taking notice. The New York AG has also emphasized over the last couple of years that they are pursuing similar activities like the IRS, and that they are looking for at the data provided by the various submissions by the charities. So the annual tax reporting, the annual reporting to New York, they're using data analytics to find issues. A perfect example is under New York law, it's prohibited to provide loans to directors. So if they check the box that they are providing loans to directors, it's an easy enforcement tool. But they are reviewing more complex analytics and using the data to provide that. In 2017, you know, just as further evidence of the collaboration, the FTC and NASCO, the National Association of State Charity Officials, co-sponsored a public conference on fundraising regulation. Unfortunately, I was unable to attend, but I hear it was riveting. But what the interesting aspect of it is that they are being forward-facing in this collaboration between the states and the federal agencies, and the point of it was to provide some public interaction with respect to what they are regulating and how. So again, the noticeable absence by the IRS with respect to any of these charities. There was also some recent news reports regarding the University of California Berkeley Law School may remove the Bolt name from the Bolt Law School, and it was because of the history of the donor's racist beliefs, slave issues related to slave ownership, etc. What's interesting in all of the news reports is they had no discussion of how the name originally became part of Berkeley Law, and I believe it was part of a contribution from his wife. And so there was no discussion of whether this was a restricted gift and whether the naming rights were associated with that gift. So it was much more of a political kind of conversation in the news rather than charitable And you know, stay tuned for the next session when there's discussion about restricted gifts. There was also in 2017 a class action lawsuit against PayPal Giving Fund. In this case, several small charities that didn't register with PayPal for purposes of obtaining funds that were given as donations filed lawsuit against PayPal for failure to distribute pursuant to donors' wishes. Unfortunately, that's an arbitration, so we don't have access to where the result is, but I do find it interesting that these aggregators of gifts, whether they're doing it through a donor-advised fund or a private foundation, are being pursued by the charities who are anticipating receipt of those funds. So that'll be an interesting trend moving forward as these aggregation of gifts continues. Another, with respect to charity enforcement, I don't know if you guys saw the news, but the Girl Scouts are suing the Boy Scouts for infringement with the way they are utilizing the word scouting. I find this interesting. You know, in talking to my trademark colleagues, I think they were surprised that they would go this route, but it's clear that the Girl Scouts are trying to stake out their territory with respect to where they want to be known as, and that as Boy Scouts try to drop the boy aspect of the name and be scouting for all, that the Girl Scouts want to ensure that they still maintain their separate identity for trademark purposes. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.